So what I hear in this place is life on the border of water and land. Here in the middle of the city, you know, people come together. This is where life is dense and buzzing. What we see here is we're on the quay of a canal quite close to Amsterdam Central Station. We see houseboats in the water, like two or three layers thick into the water. There's people sitting on the quays. There's traffic passing by. There's also all these buildings, all these residential buildings from the past, I don't know, four centuries or so, kind of huddled together, pressed very close to the water as well. And interestingly, like ecologically speaking, this border or gradient between land and water is also where you can find fertile ground for growth, as well as the highest levels of biodiversity. We're in front of Oudewaal number 21, which coincidentally used to be a masonry workshop. And just to the left side of this building, we can take a look at the brick facade. We can take a closer look if you want to walk up to it. At one single brick. And it's funny because you see certain kind of wavy incisions or a wavy texture to the side of it. It almost reminds me perhaps of waves, of water, and also of soil. I think we can imagine a single brick as the river without water, because a brick consists of clay that is dried and fired, and this clay is cut usually from river floodplains where the river has left sediment over a period of thousands of years, and then, you know, if a brick is a river without water, you could perhaps say that we inhabit the river already. So my lens concerning the Rhine River research that we did was about the regenerative river. And I investigated how people or a culture or an economy can live with the land or at the expense of the land. And I was interested in the fertile land next to rivers that is, of course, defined by the river. And maybe you could say that it is part of the river. These places are fruitful for trade, for agriculture, and for raw materials extraction, as well as other things. I was mostly interested in agriculture and raw material extraction and how these cultures relate to the land and the river. So historically, floodings would provide nutrients for the soil in floodplains, usually during winter, regenerating it. Basically for another agricultural season. But this relationship was largely lost with the advance of river containment technologies such as dikes and also the introduction of artificial fertilizer. So it was no longer necessary to flood the land, so to say. And the result, of course, is industrial monocultural farming, which is detrimental to the soil. Other aspects of the ecosystem and the climate as a whole. And there's something similar about material extraction or mining, and this is also what brings us back to the brick, specifically the mining of the clay for the bricks, for which floodplains are being cut into pieces up to about 2 meters deep. And a factory along the river Rhine in the Oipolder part near the German border this factory is now part of an international conglomerate, but historically this area was like dotted with smaller and larger brickworks. This modern factory now is like continuously burning fossil fuels to fire the clay into bricks. So this makes for enormous carbon emissions, and it creates bricks that are so indestructible that they last for centuries. While most buildings, other than perhaps the couple of buildings around us that we see here, they only last a few decades, and the bricks cannot really return to soil. And there's something about the violence and the energy that it takes to produce this that feels off to me. A layer of clay doesn't regenerate on a human timescale. It takes millennia for enough river sediment to settle into another layer of clay. We visited the negative spaces of the buildings around us that we see here, specifically the brick building that we're standing in front of right now. You know, it is sometimes said that every building leaves a hole in the ground, and brick buildings create what they call clay pits. These are, I think you can see them as the wounds of extraction. But in the polder that we visited, the dozens of clay pits that have filled up with shallow water over the past decades or century are now booming with life. They're among the most biodiverse places in the landscape, precisely because life happens especially where water meets the land. But does this regeneration compensate for all the ecological destruction and carbon emissions it took to construct these brick buildings? Probably not, or maybe sometimes. I think that I like to see water as a vessel that carries all these ingredients for life. And despite, you know, this focus on extraction and emissions and destruction, I'm also hopeful because more contemporary examples of regenerative agriculture and architecture, which are on the rise today, are about generating life and also acknowledging that life, as well as productivity, comes in cycles. In modern architecture, unfired clay is increasingly being applied, creating softer, living buildings, you could say, that require more of a caring relationship with their inhabitants, and in which, for example, cracks in the wall plaster can be repaired with a handful of water. Even if you're not, you know, a specialist or a professional plasterer. And then when the materials or parts of the building or the entire building are no longer used, then the clay can return to soil and become part of the ecosystem again. Somewhat similarly, in regenerative farming, soil health is most important. Making humans take a step back or help the soil recover with the aid of water, rather than always make it perform at 200%. One of these new regenerative farming collectives emerged on the location of a former brick factory next to the Rhine River that we visited. And I think the biography of this place specifically shows a beautiful kind of regenerative cycle on itself. So until the ultimate riverine regeneration comes, in which water may swallow all of life along the river, these could be the kind of practices for us to turn to.